Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Oh, such a clutch pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
You fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
He shoots. He scores.
Go to Blinds.com for up to 45% off and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Go right now for up to 45% off at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
The Dan Bernstein Show. Weekdays 9 a.m. to noon on Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Green Bay's not going anywhere without Aaron Rodgers in the next few years.
If he plays like we expect him to play, they got a shot. With or without a first-round receiver. He's that good. So I would do all I could to not burn that bridge. And I don't think that they did that. I think that they burned a bridge that it's going to be hard to overcome. At some point, I think it will rear its ugly head.
Strong words from Brett Favre. We heard those yesterday. I was on the Rich Eisen show as he's talking about the Packers' eyebrow-raising decision to use a first-round pick on a talented but still developmental quarterback, despite the fact that the mercurial Aaron Rodgers remains on their roster and ready to win right now. Gary Ellerson is the host of the Wendy's Big Show on 105.7 The Fan in Milwaukee, former NFLer, former Wisconsin Badger. He joins us on the Al Pamonte Ford Hotline, Al Pamonte Ford in Melrose Park. I should mention, you can also follow him on Twitter at Gary Ellerson. Hey, Gary, how are you?
Good, buddy. How are you doing?
I'm good. Happy draft anniversary, because on this day, May 1st, 1985, my guest Gary Ellerson was drafted by the Packers, the 14th pick in the seventh round. What are your memories of that day?
I remember I just made it in due to today's standards, right? Because they don't go past seventh round anymore. Listen, I was in Wisconsin on campus at an apartment. I had a Dallas Cowboy representative sitting right beside me, because they wanted me to go to the Dallas Cowboys. But they weren't going to draft me. They wanted to take me as a free agent. The call came in, and the Packers said that, well, we're going to take you. I looked at the guys from the Cowboys and say, do you guys want to take me before the Packers? Because they're about to draft me now. The guy immediately got up and walked out.
That'd be a no. So, Gary, when this all happened, there are people looking around thinking, well, wait a second, the Packers are, this is some sort of calculated power play here, and they're sending a message to Aaron Rodgers by doing this. And then the pushback came saying, no, this is just proper stewardship of an NFL team, regardless of who your people are and the personalities you have, that you have a responsibility to build with the future in mind. Latest report yesterday was that this is more Brian Gutekunst, the general manager, than it is Matt LaFleur, that this is the guy in charge looking at a bigger picture. What's the latest that we know about why and how this decision got made to draft a quarterback?
Well, listen, Dan, I think when you go back and look at the history of the Green Bay Packers, I guess we would say in the Ron Wolf era, they've been about, you know, getting a quarterback, and then they've been about trying to stay ahead of the curve, and that's why they draft Aaron Rodgers when they draft Aaron Rodgers when they knew that they had Brett Favre. And Brett Favre, they went and got, and we had Don Majkowski. And Don Majkowski wasn't a bad quarterback here for the Green Bay Packers. He was actually pretty good, average, but pretty good. But, you know, Favre took a hold to a whole nother level. Then Rodgers continued that. And so that's what they're trying to do in Green Bay, is stay ahead of the curve in that, like, we really don't need a quarterback right now. But let's let this guy, Jordan Love, learn from one of the best guys like Aaron Rodgers did. And I think that's what they're trying to do. Did I foresee them drafting a quarterback in the first round? No, I did not. I didn't see that at all. I think I was like most people in the NFL or around these circles that we thought maybe they'd go get a player to try to help Aaron Rodgers. Listen, you were in an NFC Championship game, and we knew what our deficiencies were. I mean, we just got truck rolled by the San Francisco 49ers twice. You lost to the Philadelphia Eagles in the same fashion where they just ran all over you. So you thought maybe you need a defensive lineman. Maybe you need a linebacker. Maybe you need a receiver to go with Devontae Adams. But no, they didn't do that. They traded up and got Jordan Love. I mean, after three, 4 days later, I mean, I get it. I understand it. It's not something that Rodgers want. But listen, I think we have a philosophy change here in Green Bay in that this is a new system. This is a new day. They're not really about running. I mean, they're not really about throwing the football like they used to under Mike McCarthy. I think what Matt LaFleur would love to do is run the football and have about a 50-50 split between run and pass. And I think that's what you saw evident in this year's draft.
So how does it work now as far as timing goes? If you know that Rodgers isn't getting any younger, he has to be seething about the fact that, like you say, you know, I think I saw a stat the other day that he has only thrown one touchdown pass in his career to a first-round pick, which is jaw-dropping. I can't even believe it's possible for that to be true, but I think it is. But without even addressing the fact that his replacement is now on the roster, what has to sting him is, as you mentioned, the fact that they didn't make next year's team as good as it could be when he now has the double whammy of being essentially told that his time as a Packer is now on the clock.
Well, you know, I saw that stat, and I think that stat is a bit misleading because the Green Bay Packers, for over the last 20-some years, they've been drafting at the bottom of the first round because they've been so good. Listen, I just want to tell people, Aaron Rodgers has not been void of talent. I think you can speak to that at the receiver position. At one point, you had Greg Jennings, you had Jordy Nelson, you had Donald Driver, you had Jermichael Finley, you had Randall Cobb. I'm thinking the Chicago Bears would have loved to have had those kind of weapons for any quarterback they would have liked to have. Listen, they have had talent for Rodgers. They just don't do anything in free agency. And I think that's what a lot of Packer fans wanted the Green Bay Packers to do, is spend a lot of money in free agency. I will say this, over the last maybe 3-4 years, Ted Thompson has not drafted as well as he should have. And that's what their thing was, is draft and develop. I think Ted lost his edge in drafting players, and therefore a lot of these guys did not make the team. And so, yeah, I saw that stat, but I think that stat is a bit misleading. Listen, Donald Driver was a seventh-round pick, and he's a Packers all-time receiver. So, to me, I know the first round's a big deal, but they still got a lot of players out of this draft to help Aaron Rodgers win.
We're talking with Gary Ellerson, and the former Packer has been strongly opinionated in this regard regarding what the Packers are doing. No, it's your job. You should be. I'm wondering, too, now that he's got a year under his belt, and Matt LaFleur has a working relationship with Aaron Rodgers. I remember the whole thing when he took over, the idea about, well, we don't audible. And then Rodgers says, well, we'll see about that. I have to have the ability to audible. Do we know what philosophically, how we've had a synthesis of philosophies here between the two? Or is this sort of a Mike Martz situation where you've got a guy who has rigid beliefs in what an offense should look like, and as time goes by, rather than acquiescing to what Rodgers wants, is still going to look for opportunities to impose his will?
Yeah, that is an issue. I'm not going to deny that at all. And we saw that rear its ugly head early on in Green Bay during training camp. Matt LaFleur had designed a play, and, you know, obviously – the offensive coach, they design plays, and they also design the defense on the scout team. So they kind of know where the ball should go because they know what coverage they're going to get. They don't necessarily tell the quarterback what coverage they're going to get because the quarterback has to read the defense and then find the obvious guy to throw it to. And so LaFleur had designed a play. He knew where the ball was supposed to go. And the guy was wide open that Rodgers was supposed to throw it to. Rodgers decided to go off script and try to stick it into, to Jimmy Graham, which you guys have on your team now. Mm-hmm. And it worked. I mean, he threw a great pass to Jimmy Graham. Only Aaron Rodgers could make that throw. And I know some reporters asked him about that particular play, and LaFleur said, well, I designed the play. We had the first option open. Rodgers made a great throw like he always does, but that's not where we wanted to go with the football. So we saw that early on. And so I think there is some rub between LaFleur and Rodgers, and Rodgers is a off-script kind of guy. He holds on to the football long. If I got Devontae Adams, he's saying, if I got Devontae Adams out here on the left side, I see that cornerback. I know Devontae's beating him. I'm not reading the defense. I'm throwing it to Devontae no matter where he is. Devontae's going to throw. LaFleur has a more structured offense in that he wants Rodgers to read defenses and throw it to the open guy. And that's going to be a problem, I think, down the road. They've got to find some sort of common ground with that. Now, I think last year when they start winning, some of this stuff went away, right? When you win, it cure all ills. But I still think in some regards, Matt LaFleur still wants to run his offense, which looks a lot like the San Francisco 49ers.
Aaron Rodgers, as he ages, has to perhaps think about changing the way that he plays just because he's not going to be able to buy time in the way that he has in the past. You know, you talk about how he likes to hold on to the ball. Bears fans have PTSD from the number of times where he looks like he's about to be sacked, where it looks like somebody's just got him. He spins out of the way, throws it down the sideline, and Jordy Nelson, who you forgot was on the field, who probably had fallen down 30 seconds earlier, is running directly back toward the line of scrimmage and is there for a 17-yard gain. That image is just burned into our retinas. But as Aaron Rodgers ages, and as times change, I don't think his athletic skill set allows him to do that without endangering himself in a way that he perhaps hadn't before. Is he willing to recognize that and to adapt?
Well, we don't know, and that's the million-dollar question. Will he? Because I think you have to go a ways back, but you go back to Shanahan, Mike Shanahan, when they were in Denver and when they had that offense, and John Elway figured out that, listen, I can't win this by myself. He tried and tried and tried. They went and got Terrell Davis, and John Elway says, you know what? I've got a good running back. I can hand this thing off. I mean, I still got some guys on the outside, McCaffrey and Rod Smith, and they had a Hall of Fame tight end in Shannon Sharp, but we're going to run the football. And that's the offense that the Green Bay Packers are looking at. That's the offense that the 49ers are running. Rodgers has to have a come to Jesus meeting with himself and say, you know what, listen, John Elway got two Super Bowls doing it this way, where he was a guy who liked to sling the football around. We just don't know if Rodgers will totally buy into this notion that reading the defense, being in a structured offense, is the way to go. I mean, only time will tell. And I know there's some regards out there where people think that, well, maybe they drafted this quarterback to hang this over Rodgers' head, so maybe he'll comply. I just don't think this kid, Jordan Love, is ready to play a game for another 2 years. I think it will be a mistake for the Green Bay Packers to say, all right, we're tired of Rodgers' antics. Let's go throw this quarterback out there. I think they'd be sadly mistaken. You throw this kid out there, he has no idea what's coming at him. I think you'll ruin a quarterback. This guy is probably, at least in my opinion, is about 3 years away from absolutely seeing any time on the field. They got to get him caught up. So I think it's all on Rodgers. I mean, he's got to figure out what LaFleur wants. He's got to figure out what Gutekunst wants. He's got to figure out what the organization wants. And then how he fits in. You're right. The skill set is not what it used to be with Aaron Rodgers, but he still has one of the best arms in the league.
What advice would you give Jordan Love? This guy's just a kid. He has no idea what he's getting into, let alone forget the football and learning NFL playbook, NFL throws, making sure he understands how to come to work every day. Just the mental side of the soap opera, of the attention, of the fact that Aaron Rodgers can be difficult and kind of needy, and you've got all these egos. What would you tell him to make sure he's not sort of whipsawed by all of these forces?
Well, there's a lot that goes into this, too, because there's a locker room. And now, I don't know if you – David Bakhtiari, I believe, on his Instagram post, is in a hot tub with a towel around his head. And if you can find it, you probably should play it back because there's some truth. But it's also kidding into that. And I think he pretty much said, hey, rookie, when you come in, I'm going to let you know where the heaters are. There's one on the 25-yard line in the north end zone, and there's another on the 25-yard line in the south end zone. That's where you'll be standing. Welcome to Green Bay, Jordan Love. If I'm Jordan Love, I just keep my head down. I just be a rookie, and I just try to absorb everything I can with Aaron Rodgers and just try not to get in his way and just be a good soldier. And I think this kid's going to do that. I think he understands that. I think he knows that he's a project. He's a kid that came from Utah State, had a better sophomore junior than he did his last year. At Utah State, where he just didn't look like the quarterback he did the year before. So I think he understands that he just, you know, it's Aaron Rodgers. There may be some stuff going on. He can't get involved in that. He just got to take care of his business and try to do the best that he can do and try to learn that playbook and try to then make friends with the veterans, but absolutely kind of stay out of their way at the same time. It's going to be tough to do. It's a tough position for this kid, so hopefully he survives it.
Gary, is Jimmy Graham any good?
Not from what we saw the last couple of years. I think he's lost it. He just didn't look the same, man. He was slow, plodding. He couldn't break away. He couldn't get away from bump and run coverage. He just couldn't get any separation. I don't know whether he was hurt or did he just fall off the table. But he was not what we saw in New Orleans. Most certainly not what we have seen from him in years past. He looks like his better days are behind him. And the Packers paid him like $10 million a year. We were like, that's what we're getting for $10 million, and that wasn't very good. They were better off by keeping Jared Cook a couple years before that, and Ted Thompson screwed the pooch on that.
Yeah, I wonder if they just have him not ask him to do any blocking at all, because it sounds like now that they've drafted Cole Kmet that they can tell Jimmy Graham, you're basically a wide receiver, you know, which he tried to legislate for being before when it came to to his contract, that as the U tight end, that they're not even going to start with the pretense of him being a blocker. But look, if he can't run, he can't run. It doesn't matter what they call him.
Right, that's the problem. There's no separation. Now, and I don't know whether he was banged up or not. Maybe he comes into training camp, if we have a season, in really good shape. And he's never really out of shape. He just didn't have any separation. He just couldn't break off. He just couldn't get past anybody. I mean, they had, you know, I think at the end of the year, I mean, they had linebackers covering him because he just wasn't a threat downfield anymore. And when you can't get that matchup that you need with him with the DB and then someone else get open because of that, I think that hurts your offense. And so, I mean, that was a head-scratcher that the Bears, you know, signed him and gave him the contract that they did. I'm not begrudging anybody for making money, but, I mean, hopefully he can turn his career around in Chicago and make good with that. But he just wasn't a good football player for us here in Green Bay. You guys saw him a couple times a year. You saw what he looked like. Well, he was like that the whole year for us.
Well, there you have it. That is an unvarnished scouting report and some strong opinions from Gary Ellerson. Gary, thanks a lot for joining us. Happy draft anniversary day. Have a great weekend and good health to you.
Thank you, Dan. Be safe.
Gary Ellerson of our sister station in Milwaukee, 105.7 The Fan. He's the host of the Wendy's Big Show, former NFLer. Okay, we're going to play a game here because it's Friday and I want to, and I've had this list. And I want to think a little bit about baseball. We've been doing these MLB.com all-time great positional lists. And the way we do it is I ask you how many all-time greats at a given position for each franchise are somehow connected to the Cubs and or White Sox. So MLB.com compiled a list of every team's best ever shortstop. Now think about this. And I love looking at the text and looking at Twitter and seeing how everything happens. 67011. And then we sometimes, you know, Jay or Shane or Ray will open up a mic. I want you to think of every MLB team. There are three all-time great shortstops for their team who have connections to the Cubs. And I might be wrong. I think I did most of the work on this. I could be wrong. Sometimes people say, hey, wait a sec, Bernstein, you forgot Jimmy Fox played for the Cubs. I got you. There are three all-time great shortstops for their respective organizations that have connections to the White Sox. Also think of who the answer is for the Sox and for the Cubs. I think it's really easy for the Cubs. Maybe it's easy also if you're a White Sox fan. All-time great shortstops in their franchise's history. Three with Cubs connections, three with White Sox connections. Who are they? Who am I? That's what we call this game, and we are playing it on Sports Radio 670, The Score.
This is Sports Radio 670, The Score, and 670thescore.com. Chicago Sports Station. Dan Bernstein asks, who am I?
Harris kind, I don't know. Brown.
Oh, he's tall.
Yeah, he's kind of tall, sort of tall. And he's like always wearing
T-shirts.
Yeah.
Who am I?
So he's sort of tall.
Kind of.
With hair.
Yeah.
And he wears T-shirts sometimes.
Yes.
On 670 The Score.
All right, I asked you before we took a brief timeout, if you think of every MLB franchise's best ever shortstop, how are any of those people connected to either the Cubs or the White Sox? I found six total. I found three who are connected to the Cubs. I found three who are connected to the White Sox. Five of these six are American League all-time great shortstops for their respective franchises, and only one is from the National League. And texters are kind of struggling here. I think one is fairly easy. But before we actually get to the connections, can you name the best ever shortstop in the history of both the Cubs and the White Sox? Any thoughts on this? Because I think this one is relatively easy, that for the White Sox, it is Luke Appling, all-time franchise leader in games played with 24-22 and hits 2,749. A case could be made for Appling as one of the greatest players in White Sox history, two-time batting champ, seven-time All-Star, inducted into the Hall of Fame in 1964, his number four retired in 1975. His was the very first number retired by the franchise. What about the Cubs' all-time best shortstop? It is?
Well, that's Ernie Banks, isn't it?
Yes. The first player in National League history to win consecutive MVP awards in 58-59. He was known as Mr. Cub, as you know. Banks was the Cubs' first black player when he debuted in 1953. No one in franchise history played more games, compiled more at-bats, connected for as many extra base hits. So that also is an easy one. Now, do you have anything top of mind that you just, your first name off the top of your head for somebody who is the best shortstop in the history of his team, who's also has Chicago connections?
I've got a few.
Okay.
That hit me right away.
Okay.
Nomar being one.
Nomar is absolutely true. That's the one I think the texters have probably done the best job, because Nomar with 41 B-WAR compiled from 97 to 03. Garcia Parra's early career brilliance made him an iconic figure, the Rookie of the Year in 1997, second in 98 MVP voting, and back-to-back batting titles, batting 357 in 99 and 372 in 2000.
Okay. Now, are we calling Jimmy Rollins the Phillies' best shortstop ever?
Nice call. I'm actually kind of impressed. Yeah. Jimmy Rollins, did you know he is the Phillies franchise leader in hits.
I did
more
not
hits.
Know that.
And
really
he is
the only Philly shortstop that comes to my head.
Well, they're actually, the other one who comes to mind for me, who does have a Cubs connection, is Larry Boa. Because Larry Boa was their shortstop on when they won the World Series.
Sure.
And was a mainstay of the 70s Phillies, but obviously not as good as Jimmy Rollins. Rollins had 2,306 hits, four Gold Gloves, three NL All-Star teams. So he is the best shortstop in the history of the Phillies. Pretty good. You're rolling here, Shane Reardon. Anybody
okay.
else?
Now, can I give you one that, you know, you always have that one baseball player that you love for really no reason whatsoever. He's got no association to your favorite team. You have no
okay.
reason why you actually like this guy. And that would be the San Diego Padres' best ever shortstop in Khalil Green, drafted by the Cubs.
He was drafted. Wait, he was drafted Cubs?
Yeah, that Khalil Green is my guy.
okay, if Khalil Green was drafted by the Cubs, then we have to add him to the list. Because
let me double check. Hold on.
I did not have him on the list. I want you to check that because he is indeed, because they traded Ozzie Smith when they traded Ozzie Smith, Khalil Green is the Padres' best ever shortstop. He
ranks
first. June
5th, 2001, drafted by the Cubs in the 14th round, but did not sign.
That is an awesome pull by you. That
I
one,
love Khalil
that
Green,
one,
always.
That is so cool that it just so happens that you knew Khalil Green was drafted by the Cubs. Now that makes it seven. That's great. Because Khalil Green is the top ranked among Padres shortstops in home runs with 84. It says Fernando Tatis Jr. might make his way to the top of this list, but Green's peak hadn't been touched until last year by Tatis. Second for 2004 NL Rookie of the Year Award. And then he sparked San Diego to a pair of division titles in 05 and 06. His best season was in 07 when he had 27 home runs, 44 doubles, and drove in 97 runs. Khalil Green also, I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, the only player of the Baha'i faith ever in the major leagues.
See, I can't go that deep in on Khalil Green.
You should.
But I'm gonna take your word.
If that's your guy, you should know that. You should have already walked him through the Baha'i Temple on, you know, over on by Lake Michigan just because. All right, nicely done, Khalil Green. Now, I will tell you this. We have, for the remaining best-ever shortstops in their franchise, we have a former Cubs broadcaster, we have a former Cubs bench coach, and then we have a three-year White Sox manager and a guy who played for the White Sox in 1 year in 1984. Does that help you at all?
So I have the White Sox one. I saw a texter say, so I'm not going to guess that one because I know that one. But the Cubs, would that be Alan Trammell?
Yes, Alan Trammell. Okay.
So I'm not
going to
say the White Sox one because I saw it.
Okay, yeah. Alan Trammell was, in fact, the Cubs bench coach for 1 year. And Trammell is fairly easily, I think, the Tigers' best ever shortstop. It took two decades for his Hall of Fame induction, but Detroit fans have been preaching the greatness. 20-year career, 63.7 wins above replacement by the Fangraphs formula, top 14 all-time for MLB shortstops. So that's one. The other is in the Central as well, and people may not remember that in 1984, Roy Smalley played for the White Sox. Roy Smalley played 1,148 games with the Twins, more than any other shortstop. Their all-time leader among shortstops in home runs, a well-rounded balance of hitting, power, and defense. He arrived in Minnesota in the trade that sent Burt Blyleven to the Rangers. But Roy Smalley, the best shortstop in Twins history, is indeed a former White Sox. Now, the White Sox manager. People don't remember just how good a player Jim Fregosi was with the Angels. Jim Fregosi is the best ever Angels shortstop. Made six All-Star teams. Before Mike Trout came along, not only that, Jim Fregosi was the best position player in Angels franchise history. Inducted into the Angels Hall of Fame in 1989, had his number 11 retired by the organization in 1998. So the last one remaining, his connection to the Cubs is as a former broadcaster. I don't think you're old enough to remember him, but can you name him?
I cannot, no.
That would be the all-time greatest shortstop in the history of Cleveland, and it's Lou Boudreaux.
Mm.
Lou Boudreaux was a player manager for the Indians also during the 1948 World Series season. But here's what they say. No race has been closer than this one, according to MLB.com, at any position than Cleveland shortstop. No race has been closer. Lou Boudreaux and the number two player on this list both have convincing cases to reign supreme, but he gets the nod because of his MVP award and the World Series ring. Of all Indians players, Boudreaux places fourth in WAR, 61-6, behind Nap Lajoie, Tris Speaker, and Bob Feller, ranks far above the second closest shortstop, Joe Sewell. But in their top five, it's Lou Boudreaux, and number two would have been a White Sox connection, Omar Vizquel. But Vizquel, think about how great a position this has been, that Omar Vizquel, 9 of 11 of his gold gloves in Cleveland. And they do admit there are arguments that would support Vizquel moving up on the list, but he's clearly the best defensive shortstop of all time in the history of one of the best ever all time in the history of anything, but certainly in Cleveland. So it surprised me, but either way they had gone there, we would have had a Chicago connection. So cool list. We got another one that is coming up, as this has been fun stuff to see. And I always like seeing who jumps out and what all of the wrong answers are. By the way, both of you, the two people, the two texters, the 219 and the 309 who said Jeff Blauser, please don't say Jeff Blauser anymore, because yes, he was a guy who was on a team and then was on the Cubs, but that doesn't mean you should be saying that, especially when the Braves had Johnny Logan and Rabbit Moranville as shortstops in their history. But that has been Who Am I? It's something we have been doing when we get the opportunity to stretch our legs. I don't think we'll be able to do this on Monday, because Monday is going to be our Bulls Monday, which we do after The Last Dance airs, and Will Perdue gets to sit in. He's there for the whole show from 9 to noon. Lou Kanellis is there at 11:40, and we talk about all the stuff that we see. We are your destination spot for all things Last Dance on Mondays here on Sports Radio 670. Coming up, we are going to check in with Olin Kreutz, talk some of these new Bears with him, and just see how he's doing. He's coming up next on The Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
Second down and 10, 4x4, 2x2 with the receivers. Teddy Bridgewater down the middle, wide open, touchdown, Ted Ginn! 33 yards, Teddy Bridgewater throws a strike, and the Saints take a 23-10 lead.
That's new Bear Ted Ginn Jr. He's had a long and kind of mediocre career. Like, he's been fine for a long time, and now he brings whatever that is to the Chicago Bears, a veteran with some speed. Also to Sean Gibson, a veteran safety. Looks like he's going to be the presumptive starter next to Eddie Jackson in the back of the Bears defensive backfield. Here to talk about that, a guy we haven't spoken with in a while. Always good to hear from Olin Kreutz. He is on Twitter at Olin_Kreutz, the former Bear. Joined us on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline, Alpamonte Ford in Melrose Park. How are you holding up mentally, physically through all this, Olin?
We're doing good, Dan. We got, I obviously got 6 kids, so the house is packed. We got a brand new puppy just to make sure nobody gets any sleep around here. But just kind of waiting around and hoping for good news every day that someone finds a cure for this virus so we can go back to living the way we were living.
Why would you get a puppy in the middle of a pandemic?
Because I don't run my house. My wife does.
It's 6 kids are hard enough, but I'll never forget it. It was Doug Buffone that told me when my wife and I got a dog. I didn't want a dog. My wife insisted on getting a dog. We adopt a dog, and Buffone hears about it. He goes, "Oh, you got a dog." He goes, "That's harder than a kid."
That's not true.
He was right.
At least a dog you can lock in the bathroom so you don't hear him. But the kid,
you can't lock your kids in the bathroom. Really?
Well, if you do, just don't tell anybody nowadays.
Oh, okay, good. Yeah, no, I won't. I certainly won't do that. Well, that's, man, do you have enough space that you guys can at least have? Because I know with kids who are, the age of my kids, you don't see them anyway. They're in their room, they're on the phone, or they don't really want to see you. Do you have enough? Can you spread out in your palatial estate?
We can spread out. Football was good to me, but I still have a 4-year-old and an 8-year-old and a 10-year-old, so they're still around, but you don't see the older ones. I don't see the 17-year-old and the 15-year-old much.
Wow, that is quite the life you got. And I know you usually are so busy, with the gym and helping people work out and all that. Are you able to get your workouts in and do stuff professionally remotely?
Yeah, it's one of the advantages of having your own gym during this time. At least I can go train and just keep the numbers low there and try to keep the gym clean and try to keep people as healthy as possible throughout this pandemic.
So what do you think of the two veterans the Bears just signed yesterday in Gibson and Ginn?
I really like Gibson. Turning his film on, he looks like he's going to be a really good addition to this defense that's going to look like that front seven is going to be hard to deal with. So one of the Bears' biggest problems last year is that they didn't match their turnover differential from 2018. It was probably the difference between them making the playoffs, if you ask me. So this guy looks like he can cover tight ends in the slot. Looks like he's willing to come in the box and make a tackle, and just a real good addition. Now, as far as Ginn goes, they were looking to replace Taylor Gabriel and, you know, someone who can take the top off the defense, so to speak. And he looks like he can still get behind guys. He got behind the Bears one time last year, although it did look like it was a busted coverage by the Bears in the secondary, which they had a few of those last year. But he looks like he can still do that and hopefully teach the young kids how to run those routes, get up on cornerbacks' feet fast like Mooney, the kid they just took in the fifth round. So a nice addition to their room there with what was actually left in the free agent heat.
I was going to ask about Mooney, because if the one thing we know that jumps out, he may be a little guy, but he can really move. And it isn't just straight line speed. That some of those routes that we saw, and again, I'm just watching highlights, but I watched a bunch of them, and it looks like he's got some pretty polished feet for a guy who is who's going to get every opportunity. Does that mean that there's only one job there, or is Mooney a practice squad possibility if they want to go with the veteran in Ginn?
Well, I'm sure he's a practice squad possibility, but another guy to watch is Miller, right? Because we've watched him now for a couple of years. It looks like he's wide open. But the thing you always wonder about these young guys is if they're in the right spot. So that's something he's going to have to learn, probably have to clean up his route running a little bit and, you know, just try to and learn how to get off the line of scrimmage at his size. Because, like, you know from watching the film, he's not a real big guy. So people are going to press him. I'm sure Coach Nagy has a few thoughts in his mind about how to get him open, how to scheme him open, how to give him the ball on a couple quick screens and just get the ball in a guy's hands with that kind of speed. Because the Bears' biggest problem last year, Dan, really was that he just couldn't put the ball in the end zone. I mean, if you just go back and look at their two Packers games, which they scored 3 points and 13 points, and that's who you're trying to beat. You're trying to beat the North champs. And they got to put the ball in the end zone. They lost their first game 10-3. They didn't score their first touchdown against Green Bay into the fourth quarter of the second game. So it took 8 quarters to put the ball in the end zone. So that's what this offense has got to try to find this year.
I think that sort of informs the Jimmy Graham signing, maybe thinking you get a little bit of what might be left if you just ask him to produce for you when his eyes get big, if he's getting closer to the end zone and looking for touchdowns. We just had Gary Ellerson on from The Fan in Milwaukee, the former Packer, and he says that Jimmy Graham's toast. He says he just can't really move and he can't separate, and it looked like his feet were heavy, and he didn't know if it was because of injury or not, but that's a lot of money to spend for someone who might be at the end.
Yeah, and I was with Jimmy in 2011 when I went to New Orleans when he was at the height of his career, and he was amazing, but he was pretty much a wide receiver out there at tight end, right? So, like you said, the Bears are kind of reaching for a guy like that, and that's why as good as I think Cole Kmet's going to be, it kind of shocked me that they drafted him for the Bears scheme that Nagy likes to run. I mean, a guy who would match Nagy's scheme better, I would imagine, would be Cole Kmet's teammate, Chase Claypool. But they went and got Kmet anyway. So I think they want Jimmy Graham to fill that role. But whoever you, Ellerson, he's right. I mean, when you turn the film on, you just don't see it. But I know that guys are saying that, you know, he was injured and he's feeling better this year, and that scheme wasn't really for him. But, you know, you watch the film from last year, and really the Packers were just using him as a third down tight end. They weren't even using him anymore on first and second down. They were using Mercedes Lewis and I think a guy they took in the third round there at tight end. So Jimmy Graham coming in and that money they paid him, he definitely has a lot to prove that he can still do it, that he can still get out there and scare guys in the middle of the field, because it's really what the Bears need.
I was just speculating earlier that with the decision looming, the deadline Monday for making their call on Mitchell Trubisky's fifth-year option, that one thing, you know, we learn about when it's something other than very positive news, a lot of teams like to put it out there with a simple, quiet release on a Friday evening, sort of at the end of the day going into Friday night, Saturday. And I know times have changed and our lives have been disrupted, so it doesn't mean what it used to mean. It's not like everybody's racing out to bars and restaurants on Friday night. But still, it could be following the playbook of maybe sooner rather than later. Instead of starting it in the weekly news cycle there, you kind of let it digest over the weekend. Do you have any insight into what they're going to do? And we know what is likely here, but there have been some contrarians saying, nah, you know what, they could still get out of it. So if he's not going to play anyway, if Foles is going to play, he's not going to get hurt. They're probably not going to be on the hook for $25 million anyway. So just default to extending him. What do you think?
Yeah, I was talking to somebody today, and they said, if you have to ask that question, then you probably already made your decision, right? Because, they go and give up a draft pick, and they give Nick Foles $21 million. I don't think they pick up that fifth-year option. I just don't think Mitch has played that well. He played good enough last year, especially for you to give him that kind of money, because, he struggles in the pocket, struggles processing information. I don't think Coach Nagy's very high on him anymore. They can say what they want. We all saw what happened on that sideline in the Rams game when Mitch pitched that option too early, and then they said he was injured, so they took him out, but they pretty much benched him. And then Mitch came out and pretty much said on the podium last year that he wasn't running a scheme that he wanted to run, that they wish he would run a little more play action and boots and things of that nature. So I think there's a lot more going on in that building than they let on, and I think they've lost their trust in Mitch, especially in the scheme that they want to run where the quarterback has to process information, Dan, on every play. That's the kind of run scheme they want to run. Unless they're going to go to the I formation, which Mitch was drafted for under Dow Loggins to run, and a guy that we don't hear from and I'd love to hear from is Ragone, the new passing game coordinator, who was the guy here when they drafted Mitch, and just figure out why he hasn't developed and where he is struggling and what he's not doing that you thought he could do on film in college, because we haven't heard any of that. But when you just watch it, it's just the amount they put on him. And when you watch Coach Nagy last year, when they did go to I formation, when they did boot Mitch, when they did move him around, that's when he looked really, really good at what he was doing, which a lot of teams have gone to, right? A lot of teams have gone. The Vikings went and got Kubiak to run that in Minnesota. It's what the 49ers are running. It's what they're trying to run up there in Green Bay with Aaron Rodgers under the floor. It's what the Titans are running. So that's the scheme Mitch was drafted for. And we just saw the team win the Super Bowl with the scheme that Coach Nagy's trying to run. And we all know what kind of quarterback you need in that scheme, because we just saw him win the Super Bowl.
That's why their pretense of a fair quarterback competition, I think even if they intend it to be, they've already telegraphed how it really is set up to be unfair. Because what they're grading on, what they're asking to be done, they already know that Nick Foles does it better. If you're saying, recognize the coverage, ball placement and timing, those three things. Know where you're going with it, get the ball out, and don't make the guy have to reach back for it to maximize run after the catch. We know who wins that competition, and it's all right in front of us. So I just don't know how they can pretend that they could have something that could also showcase what Mitch does well or better with his athleticism and arm strength and all that.
Yeah, and what did he say at the combine? Coach Nagy said that Mitch needs to know the scheme better than I know it. Well, they went out and got a guy who knows the scheme better than Coach Nagy knows. And you just also, you said it perfectly. Mitch is not going to win that battle. Look, even in their run game, which people don't understand is the quarterback is processing information. They're not going to line up with more. They're trying to read a guy, so they're letting a guy free every time, either with an RPO or a zone read. And the thing that drove me crazy last year was they were trying to run an inside zone read. And so they leave a guy free, which Mitch is supposed to read him, and Mitch never kept the ball. So the guy is just free every time. And if he makes the wrong read on the RPOs too, then they're outnumbered in the box, and your run game has no chance. So these are the things that if that's the scheme you want to run, these are things that Nick Foles does well. But if you run the other scheme, which we're talking about, what the 49ers run or what the Titans run, you're going to run the ball no matter who's in the box, no matter what. And the way you keep them honest is you boot the quarterback out of the pocket and throw throwbacks. If you just go back to last year, it's what the Bears did almost, I don't know, maybe halfway through the season. It came out every third quarter and scored on their first third quarter drive. I think it was like four or five games in a row. They scored on their first third quarter drive, and they ran the I formation zone boot scheme.
Let me ask you the same question I asked Kevin Fishbane early in the show. Which of these scenarios ends up looking worse for Ryan Pace and or the Bears? they don't pick up the option. Mitchell Trubisky ends up elsewhere. He rides the pine for most of the year this year, ends up elsewhere, and the light never goes on. And he has a couple more years, makes a little more money, holds a clipboard, and that's that. And this whole idea of him being a potential franchise quarterback and win because of guy never materializes. The other scenario, he goes somewhere else, and all of a sudden the light goes on. They take advantage of everything that he does well, and we just see it all come together. And I don't know, he goes to an NFC title game or he wins a Super Bowl, and Ryan Pace can say, I knew it. I knew somewhere in there was that guy. And then you say, well, Ryan, why did you run this scheme? Why did you hire this coach? Why did you think this all would work? Which of those scenarios looks better or worse?
I mean, I guess Ryan Pace looks a little better if Mitch goes somewhere else and has some success, right? So I'm guessing that the worst thing for Ryan Pace is that you trade up to number two and just took a guy who completely could not play at all. So, you know, but then again, like you just said, then you hired the wrong coach. And Dan, that goes to something no one's talking about as we're going through this year, as we talk about Mitch Trubisky. There is something here that is Coach Nagy thought, is he who we thought he was? Is he the guy? Is he the genius? Is he the offensive guru? Is he the quarterback coach? Because that's what we were sold on when he came here. But as a guy who only called plays for half the year in Kansas City, that he was the guy to bring this offense around. And yet they've had, you know, the worst year, averaged 18 points last year and couldn't put the ball in the end zone.
A question that will be answered over time as we start getting toward what we hope will be a Bears football season. Olin Krutz, always great to talk. Best to you and your family.
Appreciate it.
That's Olin Krutz. You hear him on these airwaves covering the Bears on game days, on non-game days, all throughout our Bears broadcast time. We thank everybody who joined us today. Kevin Fishbane, Teddy Greenstein, Gary Ellerson, and Olin. Thanks to Shane Reardon for sitting in as executive producer today. Thanks to Ray Diaz for your always doing what he does. Kevin Zipak, Mitch Rosen, everybody else, Jay Zawoski for getting the show all booked up for us today so he could take a well-deserved day off. Have a wonderful and safe weekend, even though some restrictions have been relaxed. It is not a license to be an idiot. You don't be stupid. Keep doing everything that you've been instructed to do. Do your best to not go out if you don't have to go out. Keep your distance from other people if you can't. Make sure you're wearing a mask. And keep washing your hands. Just do what you're supposed to do. And it's not about us. It's about the people who aren't as empowered to help themselves physically. So, with that, have a great weekend. And I always remind you this. Listen to doctors and only listen to people who listen to doctors. If you're going golfing, be safe. Hit them straight. Special Bulls Monday with Will Perdue sitting in. We'll talk to you then at 9.
This is 670 The Score, Chicago's number one and most listened to sports station, period. Thanks for keeping us on top, Chicago.
Oh, such a clutch pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, a Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
He shoots. He scores.
Go to Blinds.com for up to 45% off and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Go right now for up to 45% off at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.